You're listening to 3CR's 2025 Disability Day broadcast, Right Relations and Innovations. I'm Charlie Bear, and I'm thrilled to share a conversation I had with award-winning porn, cam, and full-service sex worker, Melina Viking. We chat about bodily autonomy and belonging as disabled sex workers. Before we begin, I'd also like to thank Amy Chiara for producing this segment and 3CR for having us. So, Melina, I was hoping you could tell us all a little bit about your career and how you came to be in the sex industry, what it is that drew you in and keeps you here today, 2 decades later.
Well, I started back in 2005 on MySpace. You remember MySpace, where you could add any random celebrity on your friends list? So that's how I got noticed. And then I thought, who else can I find? So I found a random stripper that lived at a local sort of place near a pub. And she said, oh, I use this photographer. You need to get a portfolio. And so I did. And, yeah, the rest is history. Popped it up on MySpace, as it were. And they weren't nude photos, of course, because you would have got banned. But, yeah, and then I got discovered by Howard Stern, of all people. And yeah, and then got invited over to the US, but this is where the disability roadblock comes in. I couldn't get a support worker, because this is pre-NDIS, to come over with me, because obviously I couldn't afford to pay them, because she got next to nothing funds. So yeah, had I done that, my life would have changed amazingly. But however, it gave me more fire in my belly to go, well, I'll work my ass off in Oz and see how I go.
For those of us who are clueless, who is Howard Stern? Tell us.
He was a radio announcer, and he was quite like, I don't know, the American version of Kyle Sandilands. Maybe I'm not even, maybe that's not accurate, but he liked to shock people and interviewed a lot of adult industry people within America. So how Jenna Jameson was a big one who I followed, who was one of my idols at the time.
You mentioned that, you know, without the funds to support, like to pay a support worker to come with you to the States, you were unable to go. How has getting NDIS funding changed your access to working in various aspects of the industry?
It's given me a lot of more flexibility with hours, because I need personal care as well as daily assistance. So it's given me more flexibility in doing that and allowing me to get up and do my job. However, this is where another roadblock comes in. I need somebody comfortable to enable me, for lack of a better word, to then do my job. So say if it's private work, I need them to be okay with that, and if they're not, then I can't do my booking. So there's a lot of pre-planning that has to take place, a lot of conversation, and a lot of people pass their judgment onto me. And as I've gotten older, I tend to say, well, they're not worthy of being on my team, then if they're not going to support my need to work, I'm not going to shove it down their throat. But if they're fully against my need to work and live the way that I want to live, then they're not going to enrich my life, and my funds aren't being used as the NDIS say they should be used, as in providing equality and more quality of life.
Yeah, I think that's a really fantastic way that you understand when people who are supposed to be on your team, supporting you, facilitating your daily life, when they kind of can try to curb your agency when it comes to doing something that makes them personally uncomfortable.
And that's fair. If the worker is not comfortable, that is totally fine. But trying to stop your client from doing something that they want to do purely because they need a job, we'll go and find another client, because the client pool is always going to be so large, even with the aging population. You're not going to be out of work. But it is hard to find support workers that are okay with me doing out calls per se. That's why I've turned to camming, which you mentioned. And because I can do that in my own home or wherever I want to be. And I don't need assistance specifically to do that. I can do that in my chair. I can say what I need to do, you know, and whenever I need their assistance, I can either call them or buzz them because they're in a different room. So they're not exposed to any of that. So that's why I've changed the focus a little bit. When I went into camming, I found that was a lot easier to have staff come and assist me because it wasn't in their face.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that when you belong to multiple marginalized communities, it becomes this kind of multi-layered, you know, everything becomes a little bit more difficult because you have to find someone whose skill set, comfort is even more specific. And with being someone who's ably diverse, like myself as a disabled person who is sometimes very visibly disabled, you know, I spend about half the time being non-speaking when I have to do something like go down the street to the shops and I'm low energy and I'm overwhelmed. I might be shaking. I might not be able to look up. I might be unable to speak. I might be crying. And that's just what I have to do to get to the shops. People will pull their children back from me. They'll look concerned. They will treat me as if I am about to give them some kind of contaminant.
I get that too. It's like we're going to give their child some weird disease because that's what we've decided to do for the day. Like we've got better things to do with our lives. It's taken us so much guts to get out of bed, like as you were saying. Mm-hmm. We don't actually, this might sound rude, but we don't actually care about your child. We just want to be able to survive the day.
Because I work and I talk about being disabled at work, and I work with a lot of clients who also are people with disabilities. But when I'm at work, I'm usually at my best. I'm at my like highest capacity, and it will take me sometimes days to recover from work. And that's okay. The work suits me. It's flexible. I enjoy it. And I think I'm pretty good at it. But I do notice the way that people talk about me and treat me when they see me and realize that I actually am disabled. And sometimes it's visible. And that kind of narrative that they have around me being someone who is, you know, very confident in my sexuality, very confident as a whore, they will have that flip into a much more paternalistic narrative around kind of framed as concern for my well-being. But why has this concern suddenly emerged? Partly because there is this idea that being disabled cannot exist at the same time as being sexy or having a sex drive or feeling pleasure, desiring intimacy and contact with other people. But for you, you know, you're in a chair. So your ability to kind of conceal your ably diverse nature, status, life. Your ability to conceal that isn't the same. Have you found that within the industry, or also as you've, you know, if you're doing cam work, for example, that people treat your disability as something that they have to overlook to get to you?
Wow, how many hours have we got to answer this question? So when I first started, I was modelling. So essentially I was able to hide the fact that I was in a wheelchair because I used to take photos out of the chair. So people didn't know. So that's how I got offers overseas, and then I would tell them, I have cerebral palsy, and they're like, oh, we didn't realise, sorry, we don't know how this is going to work. Well, you've seen my videos, you know it works, so it's okay. But when I go on to cams, a lot of people will think that I'm drunk when they first see me. So they'll tip a lot because they just figure she'll do whatever I ask her to do. And then they're sadly mistaken. And then some of them go, that's bloody fantastic. And others go, this is so wrong. Who's making her do this? Someone's got to be behind the scenes making her do this because she can't make her own decisions. But they don't even know me. But the majority of people have been really sweet and really supportive. But it takes a while for people to kind of look past the wheelchair, or what if I'm having a bad day, my speech will be higher, my facial expressions will be a little bit stronger just because I'm having a bad day physically. But most people are good. Most people are good. But, yeah, you're always going to have one nincompoop that is going to say, you know, this is wrong. And I've had so many people say, I'm going to call the government on you because you shouldn't be working. I'm like, you don't even know me, so you can't do that. But there is a lot of threats behind the screen, like we all experience, sadly, through social media and things. So, yeah, it has been a shift a little bit, I guess. Being a disabled sex worker is being more accepted now. However, I would have thought there would have been more shift in the last 20 years. But even me working in brothels, people are like, this is not something that we can do because we don't have your clientele. Well, who is my clientele? You tell me. You know, so they make there's a lot of judgment still passed on me, even though I've been doing this, you know, going on 21 years. Mm-hmm. I would have hoped maybe I'm not doing as much as I should. And I constantly go through that, you know, in my head, maybe I haven't done enough to make that shift, but I can only do so much.
Yeah, I agree. It's not all on you. And you have an immense body of work for people to look back on. And if anyone were to search up your name, they would immediately see that this is actually something that you have an immense amount of skill and knowledge that you've built up over decades of work.
And I think when I'm committed to something, I'm either 100% in or I'm out. So when I knew that this gave me a scope of, well, this industry gave me the ability to feel how I feel inside, so not how my physical body portrays me, then I thought I can fly and I can do that sober, you know, and it's the best, and you probably feel like that during work as well. It's euphoric. It really is. And when people can see that and you get those fans or clients that see you for you, that's the biggest praise we can get, more than the money. Even though the money's good, that euphoric feeling, you can't buy that. I use the word euphoric because I feel so trapped in my physical body that this gives me the freedom of all of that kind of goes away when I'm doing sex work. Like I forget about the struggles I had that morning, or, you know, I forget about everything that's bothering me at the time, especially if I'm filming a scene, because I'm 100% in on that and the disability does not matter. And even when I'm with a client, it's the client's pleasure, not what's, you know, I've had to deal with that morning. So that's why I refer to it as euphoric.
Some of that did actually resonate for me. I feel that, you know, part of our work, a lot of people have this misconception that sex work means that your consent is negated because of the existence of payment or a transaction. And the way that I understand it is actually quite different. I view it as like through a consent framework where the payment, the negotiation, and so on is actually part of the foundation for that consent to be given. You know, something that I see in my work is that often when I see clients who are people with disabilities, you know, I receive comments to do with, I've never been held in this way before. I haven't had someone give me this much time to, for example, go down on them before. And the awareness of giving extra time, giving, you know, extra time for certain activities, for example, being mindful that there is certain preparations that might need to be made in advance, that you've got to be flexible because something might sound good like when you're planning it, but then when you try and do it, maybe your body's not cooperating, or maybe it just doesn't feel sexy. And I think that all of that stuff is, frankly, it's not rocket science, but it is the kind of thing that is often not thought about if the conversation around being disabled and having sex is shut down before we get to that by the kind of infantilizing idea that disabled people are asexual or fragile, or that their decisions should be made by someone else who is their, like, you know, caretaker.
Yeah.
So I was wondering how, over your, you know, 2 decades in the industry, your relationship to your own sexuality, your body, your work, your disability, how has all of that changed?
I was quite a shy person before I started, if you can believe that. I hardly spoke.
It's hard to believe you.
But it's given me a confidence that I didn't even know I had, and a relationship with my own body that I didn't know I had. So I can go, yeah, my body's a bit soft and it's a bit different, but if I can come 5 times in a session and squirt, then I'm all good. There's nothing wrong with me. So, you know, it's, I always used to be like, maybe they don't like me. Maybe this, you know, if somebody doesn't like me, so be it. Go and watch somebody else. Or if somebody is in a personal relationship with me and they don't like me, see you later. There's a door. But before this industry, I would have been like, no, well, maybe they do like me. I don't know. Constantly head questioning myself and myself as a person. So, yeah, in that sense, it's given me confidence tenfold, which I'll forever be grateful for.
You know, in addition to this confidence, something that I have heard you speak about in the past is how you found a home in the industry. And I thought maybe you might want to talk a little bit about what it's been like trying to find that home.
Yeah, so I grew up Baptist, and not only that, but I was queer. So trying to bring that into a church, they were like, no, no, you're not. Let's try and rework that. And I'm like, no, this is who I am. To fall into an industry of diversity, for lack of a better word, I just felt so at home because everyone had a range of abilities, backgrounds. You didn't have to be this tall, skinny, blonde, female representing person. You could be whoever you wanted to be. And when I started, there was only one other disabled person, and I don't think they're in the industry now, but I thought, dear, they can do it. One of my, you know, I had that to sort of go, right, this is my sentiment to go, right, I can do this. But had it not been for them, I don't know, I still would have done it, but that helped cement the idea that, yeah, I can do this. And then to come into the industry and realize that we're all human, and we all come in different forms, and is the best thing ever. And people have got to realise that everyone has their own kinks, and everyone finds something sexy that other people might not. And that's okay. There's something out there for everyone. And that's how I found home. Yeah, because everyone's got their own taste, and not everyone's going to like me. Not everyone understands why I'm in the industry, and it's okay.
Thank you for joining Melina Viking and I. If you're keen to hear more from us, please find Melina at melinaviking.com. That's M-E-L-I-N-A-H Viking. Melina hosts the podcasts Melina's Margarita Sessions and the Ably Diverse Chronicles. She was the subject of the 2020 documentary All of Me, and keen listeners may have recognized her voice from 3CR's 2020 Disability Day broadcast. You can find me at charliebearbookings.com. Once again, a huge thank you to Amy Chiara of Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, and 3CR for producing and hosting this interview. You can find all our links and a recording of this conversation at 3cr.org.au. Stay tuned for a segment on how funding cuts to NDIS prevent recipients from accessing sexual services.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.